Welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast, presented by MAP. Today's a weekly unpack, and I am in Ballarat at the Shore Cycle Centre. Is that what it's called, Patrick? I got it right?
Yeah, guys, good enough, mate.
Here with Patrick Shore in a shipping container amongst the inventory. It's a really got a good warehouse feel about this one, Pat.
Yeah, well, a bit rustic, but certainly the racing hasn't been rustic, and we're only 2 weeks away from the classics.
It's come on pretty quick, hasn't it? I feel like we were down under, felt like a couple of days ago, and opening weekend is coming up real quick, but there's still a little bit to get through before we start talking about that. We're going to start with Colombia, the Tour of Colombia. It was kind of like the inaugural race last year. It was under a different name, and then this year they've just gone with the traditional Tour of Colombia, and looking at the crowds, this looks like the most exciting. There's something about this race that you just want to get there. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's unreal.
Yeah, I think if there's anything I've learned about Colombian cycling is that it's got a great culture. It's just that probably the resources aren't accessible for the athletes, and therefore it's difficult for a lot of them to make it out of Colombia or even stick with it long term because of financial support or even just the basics of having a good quality bicycle or the ability to service it and get to events. But certainly we've seen over the past decade, I guess, the Colombian riders continue to arrive on the scene. You know, you look at Bernal, for example, last year was such a revelation in the World Tour in his first season. But if there's any real takeout from the tour is that Sky sent a really serious team and really wanted to make an impact. And now in the background we hear that there's obviously potential that there's Colombian backers for the team to keep it going forward. So there's always a little bit of tactics involved, but it was a great race. And some new names onto the scene as well, which is always good.
Do you think there's any meat behind that story that a Colombian company will come on board as the naming rights for Team Sky?
Well, it would be I think it would be probably one of the teams that's a possible suitor for a Colombian backer because of their already presence of Colombian riders on the team. And they've also got the Jonathan Navarez, the Ecuadorian as well. I know it's not the same, but you know, they're
all
going
cut from the same cloth, aren't they?
That cultural area, that zone in the world, and smart so, because these riders are extremely talented, and we continue to see them rise to the top. Miguel Lopez is great to watch as well, and they're animators of the race, and I think that they're a great thing for cycling. I think we're only going to continue to see more and more Colombian riders arrive on the scene, so it's probably a smart move from them as a country to back a major team, giving them more opportunities, but also from a team's perspective, you're getting access probably first shot of the gun at the best Colombian talent. And I think in the future we're going to see them probably hold it in one particular year all three of the major Grand Tours.
It's just not climbers that Colombia is producing anymore, is it? We got Hodeg, Gaviria, Milano, who's running for UAE Emirates, who won a stage. And you've got another boy there, Pat, you've been keeping a close eye on.
Yeah, but he's not a sprinter. He's more of that climber-esque rider, Sergio Higuita. And he's pre-contracted to EF for next year. They've got onto that quick. That's smart. He rides for the Euskadi Foundation. And he's been impressive. And he'll be really good in a race that's coming up next week, which is in the Vuelta Andalusia, and I can expect him to do big things next year. But what's happening is these riders are getting picked up early on and young, and UAE, you speak about them, well, even with Philipsen choosing them as his suitor and coming out of a bit of scrutiny for doing so, but they're building a really good team in the background.
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking to Alan Piper doing the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. He's DS there now, and he was just saying that it's completely changing. It's becoming a lot more westernized. Obviously, he's there. Neil Stevens is there. So two Australian DSs, a lot more kind of international riders, because it was a heavily Italian-based team. It was kind of the Lamprey setup. But he was saying that Aru, they stopped for a coffee ride, and Aru said, "Oh, thanks for letting us stop for a coffee on a training ride."
What do you mean?
Obviously, with whoever he was riding for, the old Italian setup, there was no stopping. So just bringing a whole...
No aircon.
No aircon. You know what they're like. Just bringing a kind of a modern feel to the team,
yeah.
I guess, because they were heavily Italian and old style. And obviously teams like Sky and Trek are kind of more westernized, obviously doing a lot better things than perhaps what the Italian teams were doing 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think that as we've seen, or even last year, the French teams evolve a little bit, so they're sort of starting to go, well...
Like Miles going there, for example, yeah, Stefan Kung.
Yeah, we need to get on board because it's the old saying, adapt or die, and that's the thing. Like, you don't want to be prehistoric. It's okay to be aged, but evolve with the times and make sure that you still stay current. And, I mean... Quickstep is brilliant at doing that. They always, their tactics, although generally in the classics they're very raw and old school tactics, they still work, but they've certainly evolved to win GC races, and that's what you need to do. You need to be flexible, and you need to be accepting that you can't just have one brand of race style, and same as you can't have one brand of psychological style either, and each rider needs to be dealt with differently. I know we'll get on to later on Ryan Gibbons, and he's a good example of that. We'll bring up those types of things.
Talking about Quickstep, they had a pretty impressive Tour of Colombia. 3-stage wins, Alaphilippe, Jungles, and Hodeg. All kinds of different types of winners. Like you were saying before, very versatile, winning in a good way. It's exciting to watch. I think Gilbert won as well last week. They're just already just crushing it already, and we haven't even arrived at April.
Yeah, they always come prepared at this time of the year. But and look, you know, you're talking about riders that are always going to be winners anyway. I mean, Jungels is unbelievable. Alaphilippe continues to impress. And Hodeg, well, is he going to be one that Quickstep tries to hold on to long-term, maybe for 10 years, or will they do the old got in early and sell high as they've done with many riders in the past, particularly in sprinters? And I think that's something that Lefebvre has worked out, is that sprint talent is coming in mass. So if it's
so
coming...
So many good sprinters around at the moment, isn't there? Young sprinters.
So you don't have to be sitting there negotiating million-dollar contracts with sprinters when they're available and you've got the best lead-out train, because let's be honest, the lead-out train is 50% of the job. But Hodeg, he's beautiful to watch, and he's a motivated guy too. And you can tell that culture is still good, although obvious reasons in January with the Ilya Kiss situation.
Whoops.
But he's been hidden away. You don't see him on any of the start lists coming forward in the next 3 weeks anyways. And I think that that obviously needs to be, let cool down. It's gone away, as they always do. People forget about it. But in the background, it's a very big blemish on his career.
There's still perhaps some of that old school boys club mentality maybe within the squad.
I think that sort of ideas can pop out here and there. They're like an ingrown hair. They're really annoying and ugly, and you should refrain from trying to poke or prod them. And very disappointing. I mean, it's a bad representation of the sport for a start, and it's a terrible thing to be doing in front of someone like Evan Pohl, who's a really young kid coming through, and already everyone's sort of massaging him, telling how good he's going to be, and he may be, we've spoken about it before, but behave appropriately in front of these younger riders, because they're picking up these life skills going forward. They think that's appropriate. It certainly is not appropriate in doesn't matter where you are.
If we have a look at the GC in Colombia, it's full of Colombians. The names we'll reel off: Lopez, Sosa, Martinez, Bernal, Quintana, Urán, Alaphilippe is the odd one out there, the only real genuine gringo. Their climbing stocks is out of control.
Yeah, but the one thing that I think that they potentially struggle with at this stage, and this is saying that obviously they develop through the world tour, is just that it's not the climbing. It's getting to the climb, and it's about maintaining position, and it's about having a good team built around them. And we spoke about Sky having a very strong Colombian presence. Well, you can have a strong presence, but you can't fill the whole team with them. And there's so much talent out there. I mean, there's so many great Colombian riders now, but I really am impressed with Sosa, Bernal, these younger generation riders that we're really going to get to see develop as we would have seen French riders in the past, Italian riders, to get the exposure early and be able to be young enough to make mistakes but still get opportunities at the Grand Tours later on. Although Bernal already well and truly.
I was a bit worried about Bernal last year when he signed. He was young, he got poached from Androni, and then he was probably one of the best climbers of the Tour de France. Hopefully it's the same with Sosa, but do you think that these guys, they both got poached from Androni, didn't they?
Well, you know how he works. I mean, there would have been there'd be some dealings behind doors and some cash slide across, and because Sosa was originally going to Segafredo, wasn't he?
I'm pretty certain
it was Sosa that was going to go to Segafredo, and then all of a sudden he was going to Sky.
is there in football?
There's no
soccer,
transfer.
There's transfer fees.
No.
But I think that's something that needs to come into cycling. But I think Andrew's team, he should get some sort of compensation, some sort of transfer fee, because without that, how are these teams going to continue to develop this?
Yeah, and I've thought it for years. I think we spoke about it back when we rode together, that there was something that should be done, and certainly there would be agreements made, and whether it's like, oh, such and such a team wants our rider, they've got an equipment sponsor that's this brand, they'll organise to get us a deal for two seasons or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
but
like
those. Why does it have to be so cowboy? Can't we just get some proper agreements?
Well,
because
it's not in the UCI's eyes, I don't think. I think that's the problem, that we are held back a bit by our, as we said, adapt or die, and our sport really suffers on that side of not being ready to evolve at the speed that every other sport is. And I mean, we're still really trying our best to get live streaming working properly. I mean, we're trying everything from probably grassroots level, but we're probably actually at grassroots level almost trying more than what they are at the elite level of the World Tour. And transfer fees should be an absolute must. And I think that that would allow teams that have riders coming to end of contracts to facilitate better deals for their team, making even the World Tour teams more viable long term as well.
Yeah. The race itself, it was good. There was some exciting racing, but especially what I want to talk about is, I think it was the mountaintop finish, stage 5 or 6. Out of control. I've never seen so many people line a road. There was a crash, I think. It was Sosa got brought down by a fan who tripped over another fan. It was Rafferty's rules up there, mate. It was a lawless society. But in a way, it was kind of nice to watch. It was cycling at its most raw, I think I've ever seen.
Well, I guess I look at the racing from a lot of different perspectives, and I look at riders now more than ever as entertainers, and that's the patrons, which are the guests to see the event. They were entertained. But the thing that really I love about, and I saw it last year in the racing, the Colombians don't just watch the first 10 come through and then like, oh, yep, righto, bugger off or whatever else, or what's on for lunch or dinner. They stick around and they cheer in on riders that are in, you know, towards the back end of the race near the sag wagon.
Yeah.
They just love it. They're very passionate people, and they seem to be easily engaged, which is great. And I think that's probably what makes them so likable. And not only them, but their riders as well that represent them during the year. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Colombian riders, and I love it because they have such energy, and the people have energy too. And when you're seeing around energetic people, it raises you up to another level, and it's yeah, that's good.
Everyone that goes there just says it's the best country they've ever been to. The people are unreal. It's not as dangerous as what people think it is. I'm sure there are some pretty dodgy parts where guys are getting sliced up by Pablo's boys. But, yeah, do you think it's going to go maybe world tour? Do you think it's a, you know, people have seen that the crowds it attracts, the riders that are starting to go there, do you think it's maybe got potential to become a world tour race? Or do you think they're just happy being at the level they're at and still doing what they're doing with big crowds, big riders?
Oh, they're certainly making sure that teams take their best riders. And much like the UAE Tour that'll start next week, you have a look at the start list. They're not mucking around with the names. Like they're definitely throwing money at these teams to bring their best riders, regardless of their form. And riders that take the start line, that puts a lot of pull towards World Tour status. If you're already getting 10 or 12 World Tour teams and you're already getting, you know, your 10 of your top 20 World Tour riders on the individual rankings last year attending your event, well, you're basically saying that is a World Tour event, why not just give us the status? It just depends on how clogged up that card gets. And yeah, and they can't be just offering World Tour points every second day of the year, because otherwise it becomes difficult for rider and team management, and it also becomes a welfare issue too. We can't have the riders needing to be at peak condition for 12 months a year, which they almost are now anyways. Yeah. And I think it's a concerning factor.
I think it's nice that it is just a 2.1. It's something a little bit cowboy about it, you know?
Yeah, I think the riders need a chance to go and have fun racing a bike as well. And I think that's the great thing about the Sun Tour. I mean, it's still a UCI-ranked race and riders take it seriously, but they know that they can come out here and enjoy each other's company and build a bit of camaraderie within the team as well. And I think these early season races, that's what they should be.
Lopez took the chocolates in Colombia ahead of Sosa and Martinez. I'll take the tip there. Did pick Lopez last week, so thanks to Max Gorn and Alex Clements for not actually making the podium, making me look good. I'll be happy with
that.
Who
did they pick in the end?
They went with Rigo and Bernal.
Well, I mean, Bernal is always, but it's probably a bit early. But it was a great race, there was no doubt.
Let's move on to Tour of Provence, where your good friend Simone Clark had a good outing. Didn't come back to Australia through the summer. That's something that he normally comes back for, is that right?
So he came back pre-Christmas, but he had headed back home, and as now people will be aware, if you follow on social media, that he's had a beautiful daughter. So he and his wife Mara have brought a beautiful girl into the world. And yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see whether being a father, you know, inspires him even more. I think sometimes these events in your life can give you that extra push. And I mean, he has done no racing whatsoever. Like, he did a bit of the crits before Christmas here in Australia, just down in Melbourne, but he's really motivated, and I think he's been spurred on by his teammates too. I mean, EF have been really good already.
Yeah,
this season
they have, haven't they?
And it's like, I don't know exactly the change that seems to have happened, but they really seem motivated and like they've got a new level of race aura. Even presenting, they look like they're on the start line. Winning is what they are doing. They're gone there with the objective of winning, not we could if this and this and this happened. And he was,
they haven't really felt like that, have they, the last few years? I don't know, it hasn't seemed like they're taking it.
No,
I'm sure they're taking it seriously, but it just seems like it's almost just going around for a bit of fun. But this year, like you said, they're here to win, and they already have.
Yeah, almost like half of them meeting up with their ex-girlfriends or something. That's what the team looked like in the past. But it's towards the end of last year and kicked off again. You speak of Simon Clark, kicked off by his stage victory in the Vuelta. I reckon that's where really the ball started to roll. But they've got such a great in-team culture now too. Woods, when he was out for the Jayco Herald Sun Tour, I've never met such an interesting person. And all of the riders say the same. He's so upbeat, and even when they don't get it right, he's like, yeah, you know, that was awesome, guys. We it's so good. We're right at the front at the end. You know, he always looks for the positives. Yeah. I mean, that those types of people. I mean, that's why Neil Vanderpool has been around a lot of the teams in Australia for a lot of years, because that's what he does. He does that stuff. You think, oh, crap, you know, we stuffed it up. But then they pump up with something so random, but it's just so good. It gets your mind off those things. But Simon was great. Yeah, he's knocking at the door, and he almost stole the show on the final stage. And Denken Cobb obviously is easily the winner, but Simon was easily second and picked up the time bonuses and lost by a handful of hundredths of seconds on the general classification, and that bodes well for him into the rest of the racing.
He's taking on a bit of a veteran status now, 32. Sort of always been that leader on the road, but maybe now with a lot of younger guys on the team, he might be sort of getting a little bit of motivation from being an experienced head, a bit of a leader. And when he gets his chance, like he has here in Provence, he's taken it.
Well, he knows that he's secure at EF Education First. He feels, I think he feels that he's got great support from the team and a lot of backing for what he does and what he brings to the team. He offers the GC riders a lot of great support that probably you wouldn't expect and you don't get to see on the live coverage. Mm. But also, I can really vouch for his ability to be a mentor for younger riders too. So I think he brings a lot of aspects to the team, and he's one of those riders that probably, when you look across your list of riders and you name them off the cuff, you probably wouldn't bring him up. But then when someone did, you go, oh, actually, you're probably right. I should have added him in, because he brings so many little aspects, characteristics that you can't learn those set skills.
A gritty rider.
Oh, yeah, and he's just he just gets the job done. Oh, that's what I'll say. He gets the job done, and you go back and ask Cadell about the support when Cadell won his world championship. He'll bring up Simon. He was his main man for going back, getting bottles, just holding the draft, you know.
And donkey work.
And people don't. A lot of people don't see those stories in the background, and they're the best stories of cycling.
So we've gone from talking about Colombia to talking about almost the contrary in Oman. There's a few sheiks at the start line. It looks like there's a bit of a club race. There's a few temporary fences about, a little bit windy, and that's about as exciting as it gets at the departs in Oman. And they get some big names there. GVA's there. Christoph is there.
Well, the big names come out because the money's there.
Yeah,
the money's
there's a lot there. Of cash there. We know that, but comparing that to Colombia, it just does not get you excited. Oman, the parkour, it's a little bit boring, although we did see some crosswinds the other day, which is exciting, gets a little bit of a taste for what's coming up in spring. But just to go through the stages, Christoph, one of Max Gorn, he was talking about him as someone that's underperformed, gets the win. He also called out Jungles, and he also got the win. So not a great little period there for MG. And then Luchenko, he's gone B2B on the stages, and Sonny Kroll barely won last night. And the riders head to Green Mountain tonight, where the race will ultimately be decided. Luchenko won here last year, and looking at the GC heading into Green Mountain, he's probably the favourite to go B2B on the GC at Oman, I would have thought, Pat.
Yeah, last year, I mean, Astana went 1-2 with Lopez taking the stage on Green Mountain. Pozzovivo seems to be everyone's favourite, and closely behind Greg Van Avermaet. But I look at the list and I look at the riders, and I think even Rui Costa. I mean, last year, Rui Costa, top 10, about 50 seconds down. No Nathan Haas there this year. He's ill.
He went home. He was there, but he's gone home. Mm. He's had a shocking start to the year, and Haas.
Yeah, he's had a few things pop up, but let's see what the classics offer for him. But Lutsenko goes back-to-back of the GC, and I think he's actually a legitimate chance to take out a third stage. And Astana are absolutely humdinging, aren't they? They are flying. And this team they're taking to Ruta del Sol in a couple of days' time is incredible as well. And they're another team that just continues to acquire great riders. And I think that they're really sending their teams in the right way. So they've put their teams together so that they can be equally as successful no matter what race they go to. They're offering each other opportunities. But firstly on Kittel as well, I think we're going to see the old Kittel return this year. There's some great performance managers that are at Katusha this year, and I think they're going to make the difference for him. But, yeah, Lutsenko to take out the stage on Green Mountain. Rui Costa thereabouts, but I think it's Lutsenko also to take out the GC.
He's an interesting sort of rider, isn't he, Lutsenko? You just don't know what he is. He won under 23 Worlds 2012, I think, at Limburg, kind of, I guess it's sort of similar to Amstel, the parkour, and then he's quick, but he can also climb with those guys that aren't quite, you know, probably the tier two or tier three climbers. He's a really interesting one to watch, and just wins from a lot of types of different situations. So,
yeah, well, he's not a very tall rider, and he's average weight. It's about 70 kilos, but I think the thing is that if the climb isn't too long, he's able to sustain a high amount of power because of his weight.
Yeah.
His power to weight's really good for a period of time, but it also gives him those opportunities in crosswinds where the climbers don't get. So he's picked up a lot of bonus seconds, and that's the difficult thing. So, you know, Pozzovivo needs to take, I think, he needs 27 seconds or something around that. Greg Van Avermaet needs about 14 on him on the stage to take over the lead. And I just think that he's going to be thereabouts with Greg Van Avermaet anyways in any scenario. So, yeah, I think he's the favourite.
One of our favourites here on the pod, who we've talked a lot about this summer, Ryan Gibbons. He's been knocking on the door again at Oman. He's at a fourth and a third. And in the 12 days of racing this year, he's picked up a fifth, an eighth, a fourth, second, third, and a fourth. Knocking on the door is R. Gibbons, and I think he's going to break through this year with a big win. He really is. He's there, and it's just going to take one day where it all comes
tell you
together.
What, he's Amstel Gold. He's starting to. I'm sorry, Milan San Remo.
Amstel got maybe mixed up, a touch hard.
Yeah, very too hard. Very much too hard. I got mixed up there because I was trying to think about, you know, everyone's been wanting to find out what the recipe is for him. He's come out and said, "What did I do? I trained less and I ate more in the pre-season."
Tip for all the youngsters out there, it's not getting on the piss, it's not eating cars, but it's it's about doing the right things.
Yeah. And it's interesting, jump on Twitter and follow Trevor Court. He's been really interesting to follow this summer, and as soon as I saw Ryan Gibbons performing at the rate he was at Tour Down Under, I've wanted to find out who's behind this and what's happening. And he's really taken to it the last few days, in particular, talking about in his experiences looking after high performance athletes. And one of his tweets that he mentions is that if there's anything that he's learned, it's that athletes striving to be as light as possible are usually the ones that bring about their worst performances. And in fact, often he sees riders that are carrying a kilogram or more than what they wanted to because of setbacks or injuries. Certainly they do find their best performances in these times. And I think there's a lot that rings true with that, that if you're concentrating so much on getting light, you're probably letting yourself down in other areas as well, when really the core fundamentals of getting results is to be good enough when it matters. And often a little bit of extra weight doesn't hurt that. Certainly if you're doing an hour climb or you know, GC in the Grand Tours, weight's crucial.
Yeah, it is.
But in one day racing, or particularly early season races that have 10-12 minute climbs, a little extra weight can really help too.
It's a bad culture, isn't it? The whole got to be as lean as possible. And like you just said, of course, if you want to win the Tour de France or you want to win the Giro, of course, it's something you've got to really focus on. But for the young riders who might be doing 10-15 minute climbs, you're right. It's better to have that extra little bit of weight, that extra little bit of grunt. You're going to stay healthy. I think there's definitely something in that from Trevor and Ryan. So it's good to see that yielding fruit for him, and hopefully he can jag that big win shortly.
Yeah, well, he's going to be pumping at the door. I mean, he's still very young too, so it's great to see.
Yeah, he's only 24.
Yeah, and it's great to see. I mean, and it seems like another place that's got some really good culture, and you know, it's what you come back to all the time. I had a pleasure of interviewing Tim Decker, National Endurance coach, and at Melbourne Awarnable, and he said, without culture, you've got nothing. And it's so true. And have a look at the success that the team is sharing in the endurance track squad. So yeah, it's I believe that too. Without culture, without belief in the team, you've got nothing.
Speaking of the Melbourne to Warrnambool, Pat, you were there on the weekend doing a little bit of commentary, and it was the local boy here in Ballarat, Nick White, who took the Chockies, probably one of the pre-race favourites, but it's a race that can get out of control, and it did get out of control. 13 riders went up the road, and that was it. The peloton shut down. The race got out to best part of 15 minutes. The police were about to pull the peloton if they didn't start riding to minimise the gap, which is fair enough. They can't have the road open for so long, but what were your thoughts on the race? Obviously, you're obviously happy with the outcome, but the race itself,
course was great. Course
new parkour, yeah, yep. Different
that,
running.
That was good. Wind wasn't all that hot, like that hard. So, in a strong wind, you would find a very, very different bike race in the back half of the race. But look, obviously ecstatic to see Nick take the win. In my mind, and not from a biased perspective, he was a level above come to the finish, which is great to see because it shows that he's continuing to progress. But the 14 riders or 13 that ended up being in the front group, they made the bike race and they all raced and they all gave themselves an opportunity. At some point or another, they all attempted at least once to try and win the race. Okay, some of them were probably a lot less likely to win than the others, but it didn't stop them from trying. And it was great to see some of the smaller teams represent and still and give it a nudge. Brendan Johnson was brilliant to watch in the final. He was really good to watch. Cyrus Monk was right up there, but once again, I think he just over-contributed at the wrong times. He had to ride across a three-minute gap, which he did with Peter Molostik early on in the race. He wanted to fix the problem. He knew he missed the split, wanted to make it. He did that. So hats off to him for that. But I think he over-contributed probably a little bit. And in fairness, I mean, it was a great group. They worked all day. And they took it down the final 20Ks. Jump on Facebook and check it out because it really was an entertaining race. And they all tried to win the bike race. It was great to watch. It was also great to see seven women finish the 262-kilometre race, and Peter Mullins took that out from Taryn Heather and Rebecca Wyasak. And for seven women to arrive and do the 262 kilometres, I think that really shows the rest of the domestic scene that it's plausible, it's achievable, and it's a real event. So they fought it out. They were separated by 15 metres, first, second and third in the women's race as well. So plenty coming out of the Melbourne to Warrnambool, but yeah, it was a great race.
Happy with the new time slot on the back end of the summer, the cycling of summer, probably a good area for it.
Yeah, definitely. Would love to see some international riders come out again as they did in the past, and maybe even try and get it back some UCI status.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's in the pipeline for the organisers. They really just want to develop the race, and this year was a really good step forward. It was a big improvement from last year, and crowds were up, and viewership for the live stream was really good. It was a lot of joy to be able to bring the coverage, and also to see. Been waiting a long time in Ballarat for someone to win the Melbourne Warney. I could never get close myself, so it was great to see Nick White. Yeah, take it out.
He's had a big summer, under 23 national champ, got some miles in the legs at TDU, shows that he can win after 6 or 7 hours at Melbourne to Warrnambool. So I'm really looking forward to seeing his progress throughout this year with Bridge Lane, so he's going to get a lot of good opportunities there. Coming up, Patrick, it's the season's really starting to kick in now. We've got Algarve coming up, Route de la Soul opening weekend shortly. Just look towards Algarve, which starts tonight, I believe. Traditionally a race where a big name wins, Kwiatkowski, Grant Thomas, I think Richie Port might have even won here. But this year, the start list doesn't look quite as elite as what it has done in the past. There's a 20K TT, there's a hilltop finish. Wasn't enough to lure in some of those big names that I just mentioned. Looking at the favourites, for me, I'm probably looking at Enric Mas from Quickstep. Obviously, they've had a super start to the year. It'd be no surprise to see him go there and win. Terry Gogenhart might get a little bit of leadership responsibility for Team Sky. And then Aru, you never know what he's gonna produce, but he's probably got to be amongst the favourites there. But for me, it's probably Mass.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a good TT as well, which is going to be crucial. But, you know, I love Guerrero. We look at him. Gegenhart, you mentioned. Well, Poles, he's obviously moving well after the summer. Van Baal, I mean.
Yeah. He can time throw as well. Yeah,
and he was so impressive at the Herald Sun Tour. And little did a lot of us know that he actually has a lot of history back here in Australia with his father. So.
What's the history?
Well, he spent time out here, I believe, when he was a rider. So there was a post up, and I didn't look into it heavily, but I can find that info for you, and I forwarded it on. But it meant a lot to him to win in Australia. Yeah, and he was grateful to be out here and perform at such a level. And he was phenomenal. It was great to watch. Other riders, obviously, Fabio Aru comes back. He's going to try and do something, but you just don't know what you're going to get.
You never know with this bloke.
He
needs 2 weeks of racing to finally get warmed up, doesn't he? Third week of Grandies is traditionally been in the past where he's had success, but like you said, it's a lottery with Aru.
Really interested to see what W52 FC Porto produces. They've always got some absolute flying talent going around. So and same with FL Pal. They're going to really be up there. But can they time trial quick enough? We'll find out.
Probably not.
Nah, it'll be a great race. Anything in Portugal is always going to be flat out.
Yeah.
Always love to tune in because their pace is just cruel. You tune into a 200-kilometre race, it's over in 4 hours 10. It's just, like, pretty quick. So, yeah, that'll be good. Ruta del Sol on at the same time. That's going to be a great race to watch. Astana and Mitchelton Scott take absolute...
Do you want to reel off some of those names that are on those two team sheets? It's elite.
Yeah, so Ion Izaguirre, Bilbao, Sanchez, Fulsgang, Dario Cataldo, Andre Zietz, and De Vries, they go there for Astana up against Mitchelton Scott with the Yates brothers, Jack Haig, Esteban Chavez, Mikel Nieve, Matteo Trentin, and Affini. And it's going to be a very interesting race. Astana flying. I spoke about it before. I think they're splitting their teams up really well. Bilbao's obviously an opportunity to win this tour overall, as is Izaguirre, who can time trial well. Can't count out Luis Leon Sanchez. And then you've got Jakob Fulsgang. So, I mean, you've got a long list. And then across the board, Jack Haig continues to improve. Nieve will do his normal role, but if he gets an opportunity, he'll be difficult to beat as well. And the Yates brothers. So it's going to be a great race. That's going to be the race that I make an effort to tune into next week. Because
that's tonight as well.
Over the next week. Yeah. It's going to be awesome to watch. But I'm going to... I'm a big fan. I hope he takes it out, actually.
Kruijswijk is there for Lotto as well, with Sepp Kuss, who really broke onto the scene last year in America. Americans traditionally do well in their home races, kind of struggle a little bit when they get into Europe, but hopefully he can climb with the front group on some of those days. Mahorek is there, always one to attack a race. You never know what he's going to do. Always throws a cat amongst the pigeons. And Dylan Toons as well. He's had a good start to the year. New team with Bahrain Merida. Probably targeting some of those classics in the Ardennes, but can climb well as well. So he'll be one to watch.
Can't leave Tim Wellens out of the argument.
Yeah, you're right.
After his effort
can
last
do a good
year.
one-week race, Tim Wellens.
Yep, and he'll be all cylinders flying for the Classics season. So, yeah, he's another one to watch. And earlier we spoke about the Colombian Higuita, who's signed for EF Education First for next year, and he's definitely one to watch at top 10.
A little bit of news, just one news item that I picked up through the week. I saw a tweet that the under-19 Paris-Roubaix was threatened to be cancelled. Fell short on cash, not the first time that this has happened in sport and especially in cycling. And a former winner of the race, he's won the race, 2015 I think it was. He also won on the cobbles in the Tour last year. Degenkolb obviously saw this and then he set up a GoFundMe page to raise the money.
Yeah, well, they wanted $10,000, I think, and I think he said, well, if whatever the shortfall, I'll fill in. But yeah, he set up the page, and hasn't it gone viral in the cycling community? Isn't it? And I guess these are the things that you like to see happen, but at least people that are probably in a little bit nicer financial situation than you and I, who can make that difference, are doing so. And yeah, of course, these are important races. I mean, they're not everything. It's under 19s, let's be real. And but it's still an important race to start on the calendar. It really struggles on my side of things to see that you can have Paris-Roubaix is like the, you know, the holy grail of cycling.
And yet
this under 19 race, what, the race can't afford to fund it.
Is it done by the same organisation? It can't be,
and it probably isn't, but it should be, and it should be supported at very least, if not sponsored by the main event. It should be part of it that they concern themselves, should I say, with grassroots all the way through. And I think that's, again, something that we really need to make sure that we're doing. So
absolutely,
that make sure that those massive events filter down and are doing something for grassroots somewhere along their pipeline.
How do you reckon that'll go down? FIFA can't run the under 17 World Cup this year. Sorry, you guys won't be getting a tournament.
Yeah, no.
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Nah, but it's a different world, and I sometimes think what it would be like if cycling was the football of the world.
Looking at the crowds in Colombia, there's no reason why it can't get some sort of traction. I'm excited to see what happens in that area of Colombia. But yeah, good to see John Degenkolb. He's obviously still quite down to earth, knows where he's come from, appreciates the support that he's had in the past and is giving back. So that's great to see from Degenkolb. That's all for today. Thanks, Patrick, for joining us. Real pleasure. We'll hopefully get you on a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever it is. But thank you very much.
No, all good. Love to be here and have a look. I mean, it's going to be a very, very busy next month.
It is. It's exciting, isn't it? It's really starting to kick off, and classics are just around the corner, which we love. Thanks to Matt for all their support with the podcast, and we'll see you back at the Social Club next time.